Hello and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters, episode 497. I'm your host, Harry, joined today by Connor.
Hello there.
And I did almost mess up the title of the podcast.
Yeah,
you
I
saw the little smirk there. Today we're going to be talking about the Conservative Party conference being an absolute catastrophe with first-hand experience. Connor was there himself, and he's going to relate all of that back to us. We're also going to be talking about the shock horror news that all journos are a bunch of spoilt rich kids looking to ruin your life with daddy's permission.
Water then, also wet.
Yes, I know, surprisingly enough. And then we're going to be taking a look at Netflix's Dharma series, which is supposedly pure propaganda. And with that, let's get into the news.
So Rory and I had the recent misfortune of attending the Conservative Party conference. And I say that, we made the most of it. We enjoyed our time there, particularly with fellas like the Mallard lot, who we're good friends with.
Yes, you were talking about some of the good people that you met there. We don't want to be tarring everybody at the Conservative Party conference with the same brush, just as a disclaimer to start off with.
Specifically because if you do that, it turns out you get kicked out of the party, which we will go on to for young Conservative activists. So just going to put it out there, we came away with the conclusion that we need to do a Trump and do a party within a party, because the Conservative...
Or drain the swamp.
Sure, the unlikelihood of that happening because of all the civil service being deeply entrenched Labour people is not going to happen. But the idea that Conservative Party can be counter-captured is the prevailing sense from the people who pretty much collectively inside the tent when there's going to be a massive Labour victory coming down the pipe.
Well, I mean, a start would be not having Labour consultants giving advice to what the Tories should be doing.
We'll get there, don't you worry. So between all the free gin, the protests, which you'll be getting footage of very soon. Next week, there's going to be a massive compilation video of all the on-ground footage we did, and holding our nose at the smell of rotten eggs that came from Birmingham's only nice part, which is Victoria Square. Yes, Birmingham is a dump. We're not going to apologise for that. We actually attended some events, and you're going to get some first-hand reporting from some of the panels, particularly because we came away with a booklet with all of the stuff going on in it. I've bookmarked some pages, so we'll discuss some of what happened. I thought we should have some reflections on a ravaged conference to go forward, shall we? For a positive vision of what England should be, I suggest you go and sign up to lotuseaters.com if you aren't paying us already. Please pay our wages, we need it. I did a deep think a little while ago called Englishmen for Exclusivity Against Equality, and the reason I brought this up is because there's a section under here called Trans Toryism, and one of the best ways to identify what you should be is to juxtapose yourself with what you should not. And a lot of these fractionating interest identity groups taking root within the Tory party have massively derailed it, and they're singing from the same intersectional hymn sheet as the left. Go and have a look at that to not only find out what Englishness is and how to reassert ourselves, but what perhaps we need to root out of the current political movement, which it seems to be our only way to remoralise the country.
Carl is absolutely right when he says that the Conservative Party is trapped within the Blairite paradigm, which seems to be a paradigm that even Blair himself has had to admit doesn't really work.
It's interesting because we spoke to some political advisors, like my good friend Peter Caldwell at Talk Radio, now Talk TV, and he said he doesn't think the Conservatives are Blairite. So we have an interview with him coming out, but we also went to a Tony Blair Institute panel, multiple of which were held at the party conference, and yeah, the Conservative Party are definitely operating within the managerial state paradigm. And that was inside the tent, and that's what made it very dispiriting. Whereas outside the tent, everyone was going, culture, immigration, cost of living, all of these are caused by your over-interference.
By the sounds of it, many of them were fans of ours.
We actually had quite a few viewers come up to us.
We are certainly not Blairites.
No, we had a lot of viewers come up to us, actually. A couple of handshakes. One guy asked for a selfie. If you're watching, sorry for my face. I was drinking.
His face is just naturally like that. There's not much you can do
about it. Yeah, like a miserable git 24/7. So every year there's a tradition we kick it off with. The martyr of Conservative Party conference. Last year it was a fellow named Os Cullinan. This year it is a guy called Daniel Granger. I've spoken to Daniel offline and in person. We actually ran into him outside the party conference tent as he was waiting around for a meeting with Conservative Party headquarters to see if his event and his party membership would still go ahead. And the reason was, and Callum's covered this, but I thought I'd cover it because I have some more immediate experience with the fella. He tweeted out, "Birmingham is a dump." That's it. A purely observable reality.
Uncontroversial statement, even from Birmingham natives, I'd imagine.
Yes, then Byline TV contacted someone close to me who also knew Daniel and put him in touch with the station, who said, "We want to air your side of the story." There were two clips that Byline put out that made them look thought that they looked like very honest and integral journalists. And I wanted to cover this just to, for the Conservatives watching, whether you're part of the party or not, of whether you're in another country, never give an interview with a leftist news outlet because they just hate you and want to smear you. So let's look at the first clip, shall we?
Do you think that Birmingham is a dump?
No.
Do you think it's deeply offensive to the people that live in Birmingham to have a Conservative, you know, a member of the Young Conservative group calling their
city. Of course I think it's offensive.
What do you think should happen to you now?
Well, I think that there's an investigation going on. I'm not going to get into the details of that. That's up to the Conservative Party. I mean, even speaking to you guys tonight, I feel I have no choice but to speak at this point because of what is getting way out of control. It's horrible, it's nasty, and it's bitter. But I can't do what I enjoy doing, which is giving opportunities to young people, because people have decided that I'm something that I haven't. The fact that I find it unbelievable that the fact that the media has decided that a 22-year-old volunteer is somehow newsworthy for saying stupid things or for saying something that was ill-conceived or just needed further explanation is insane. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I recognise that. And my mistakes are mine to own, to be honest. And if they don't agree with me, that's their right.
So do you see the mistake he made there?
I see many mistakes he made there. So just to clarify, this Daniel is being, what, kicked out of the party?
He was removed from his position as chairman of the Young Conservatives Network. That's the youth group affiliated with the Tory party. He was then, I believe, removed from the party. He was not allowed to go into party conference and his event was shut down. He was not allowed to chair.
Okay. Well, my immediate problem with everything that he said there was that he immediately capitulated to the line of questioning. There were very leading questions asking whether, don't you think it is offensive? The answer shouldn't have been, well, yes, and I need to reconsider and I need to maybe put things a bit more sensitively. Is, yes, it's offensive to natives of Birmingham. I don't care. I'm describing reality. The question that we should be asking is what, as Conservatives, can we offer to Birmingham to improve it? Because I'm sure whether the natives find it offensive or not, it could be a much nicer place for them to live if something were done about it.
Yeah, there's a lesson in optics here, and I believe Daniel may be even watching this by the time it goes out on YouTube. First of all, to him and anyone else who does this sort of thing, don't think the vultures circling your corpse are going to give you any good graces. They don't want to be on your side. They want to ruin your reputation. Two, don't apologise. Double down. Because what you could have said, spinning it, and he did a follow-up tweet that said it might have something to do with the majority Muslim population, which is spicy, but Daniel's also gay, so he could immediately play the card of, yeah, because they hate me, and they won't want to go here. And also, he could have turned around and said, yes, Birmingham has now a Conservative mayor, but how can 10 minutes of Conservative mayor make up for decades of Labour policy? So you could have immediately pinned it on the political opposition. But unfortunately, mate, you weren't very astute here. And this second clip is a lesson as to why you don't go into it expecting good graces from the media, because they decided to get a bunch of messages from a private group chat and ambush him with them.
We have got messages from a WhatsApp group that you've been involved in.
Uh-huh.
You've used the word retard here. Mm-hmm. This is the context.
Okay, I'm happy to explain that.
Why did you use that word? Why do you think that's acceptable?
Well, it's a discussion of a policy point. We're talking about the policy, not a person. I wouldn't use that term lightly. And I think sometimes, as I said earlier, you have to really highlight to some young people that what they're saying can be really damaging and it can impact on them and reflect on them. So look, I make no apology for being firm and rebuking points that I think are silly.
Yeah.
And look, to be honest, you can see the context of it if you read it. It's not a tweet.
So would you agree that that term is incredibly offensive?
Of course I do.
Yeah, do you regret saying that?
In that context, I don't think so. Would I use it towards another person? Absolutely not.
Do you regret using that term?
Of course, in the sense that I regret that it can be misinterpreted. I regret that people would seek to take something that I have said in a private group chat in which there are rules and that say sharing of those kind of messages is against the rules. Look, I respect that you have sources on those. That's fine. I think it's fair to say no?
Given these new revelations, given this WhatsApp group that you've been involved in and that use of language, do you think that you should resign from the Conservative Party?
No.
No.
Not
do you think that the Conservative Party should still allow you to be a member?
Absolutely.
Language like that?
At least he didn't agree that they should fire him. Good God. Daniel, if you're watching this, do not play into their games. Everybody knows that the term retard is just a strong word for incredibly stupid. Nobody is actually offended by it. They've taken a word that they know that people like to use and made it improper to say publicly as a complete power play. Do not play into their games. What you should have said when he said, do you think it's offensive to say that, is you should have just looked him in the eye and gone, don't be a retard, come on.
Well, you could have also spun it quite easily and just said, oh, Winston Churchill said Islam is a retarding force on nations. You can say things are retardant in that they stop fires, for example. So if I'm going to say it's a retarded policy, I'm going to say it's going to retard the growth ambitions of the party. I'm not saying that's how you specifically used it, mate, but you could have spun it that way. So bit of political
I think doubling acumen. Down and just calling the people calling you out for such things retards is the best approach to this.
That too. Speaking of retarded, the reason that these got leaked, and this isn't here, but I have the inside source on this, is that a conservative activist that was also in the chat, who is on our side of the fence, actually leaked it. And it's because Daniel had before kicked someone out of the group for saying something a little bit spicy, which I won't repeat here. So Daniel did accidentally, I suppose, create the beast that has now devoured him. But also, if you're watching, person that leaked that to Sky News to character assassinate someone else, kick them while they're down, you missed a Road to Damascus moment where we could have absorbed someone pretty influential in the Conservative Party to our way of thinking via forgiveness. And Daniel's pretty sympathetic now to the way that we do things on our side of the aisle. So don't do that just to try and get some clout within the party. Stupid move. Anyway, this is why you shouldn't trust Byline TV, because they've actually retweeted what looks like a bot account with stands with Ukraine and a mask in the bio and the name. And it says, this is astonishing. Granger shows no remorse for his shocking language or beliefs and believes he is the victim for being called out on it. Excellent reporting by Byline TV. They retweeted that tweet. They're not a neutral outlet. They are a character assassinating smear merchant, a propaganda peddling place.
Eskimo,
destroyed
Ukraine
reputation.
Flag, what a surprise.
Yeah, but it might also be a bot account. It looks like a bot account if you go onto the profile. So,
well, yeah, of course.
Don't trust the bloody people who are putting this out. And again, listen to conservatives. Don't give interviews to leftist outlets. Anyway, so let's go on to the actual Conservative Party conference, shall we? So day one was beset by a bunch of protesters. There were like the Tigray genocide protesters outside. There were the Socialist Workers' Party and People's Assembly, Extinction Rebellion, Steve Bray. We got interviews with a bunch of these people, which you'll be able to see next week. But I just thought I'd read out some of the panel titles, because honestly, what was going on here was pretty fascinating. So for example, the Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. What should the UK be doing to promote global gender equality at Conservative Party conference?
Nothing.
Yeah, there were Women to Win and 50-50 Parliament conferences.
Was there anything on any panels, conferences on recapturing the British spirit?
Nope.
Reclaiming heritage?
Nope. There were barely any cultural ones.
Strengthening local communities?
The new Cultural Forum had a lunchtime reception.
Is that it?
That it.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there was lots about how we can make...
Unmasking online misogyny?
Yeah. But
yep.
This is what the Conservatives need to focus on. After having made gays and women more than enough comfortable in the party, we need to keep questioning how can we make them more comfortable
How can we hashtag ask her to stand and get 50-50 Parliament? Together with refugees. The Tony Blair Institute had about three panels, one of which Rory and I went to.
And how was that? Well, I don't want to spoil anything if you've got that up your sleeve.
We can discuss some quotes momentarily. There was actually, LGBT plus conservatives, am I safe to be me? And on Monday, they had a lunchtime reception with Stonewall, of all things. They're letting them in. One of my favourite ones.
Is Stonewall dead yet?
No, they're still being propped up, and we'll get onto how in a minute, by the Prime Minister herself.
Is it literally just by the Conservatives at this point?
Yep, it is. And the best one was Conservative Environment Network. Climate change and gender, a men-made problem or red meat for culture warriors. Identity politics has seeped into the climate change debate. While climate change and gender inequality are interlinked, is it right to treat climate as a gender issue, or does it risk undermining support? So they're already going with the premonition that men have caused climate change, but the optics are bad to say that it's a feminist issue. This is the Conservative Party, not one of Callum's Labour Party conference compilations. What are we doing?
Although we will have plenty of embarrassing footage from it, I'm sure.
We'll have embarrassing footage from both. There was also a Tuesday night Ella Henderson TikTok event that Liz Truss allowed to go ahead despite saying on the campaign trail she was going to ban TikTok.
Which one's Ella Henderson?
Ella Henderson's a singer.
Oh,
another pop group hasn't. And then the Tony Blair Institute that we went to had some really interesting quotes. They were talking to some focus groups who basically said, we don't want Ukraine because it's making us cold. So there were some quotes like, the sooner the Tories drop the growth plan, the better. Conservatives need to seek other answers on immigration, on the NHS, but not reducing them or scrapping them. They were actively advising Keir Starmer to, quote, think about what his radical agenda is. Quote, we saw some Corbyn praise in these focus groups because he stood for something. So Labour needs to think about how they're going to be radical as well. Labour needs to think about how they're going to be radical at Conservative Party conference.
Well, I was going to say, this is all speaking to Conservatives and the Conservative Party. Why are they going on about Labour? I mean, I can understand some of the points that they're making in terms of, I don't know, rhetoric, being able to present yourself and brand yourself in a such a way that the people on the ground will actually understand where you're coming from. This was the great success of Boris Johnson in 2019, is that he made the platform entirely about Brexit because he understood that that's what people wanted. Whether or not he actually, you know,
abided by it
and kept his promises is another thing, but that's how you get success in politics.
And then they also argued that levelling up is redistribution. So there was actually a panel there that said, what does levelling up even mean? That's 2 years after they started using the phrase. So they're now allowing the left to define levelling up within their own conference. It's like knowing mold is behind the fridge and just pushing the fridge back anyway. Why are you giving these people a platform?
I mean, once again, these are excellent points because these are points that the enemy are absolutely demolishing you on. If they're saying, what does levelling up mean anyway? That's a good question. I've looked into levelling up online. I've still no idea what it means other than general and incredibly vague infrastructure improvements or local community strengthening. And it's like, okay, but what is that?
I'm sure the multiple panels from the Centre for Social Justice at Conservative Party conference will be able to tell you, Harry. There was also a great panel by Orthodox Conservatives. I know Luke and Joseph, for example, who run that, with David Starkey, wonderful Chris Rose, Maya Tusi, and Timothy Stanley from The Spectator and Telegraph. Fascinating stuff, talking about conservatism being inductive, talking about the antithesis of British conservatism and principles, which I don't agree with Starkey on, but it's a really interesting conversation. And Laurie Penny was there. They let her in. God knows why, because it was ticketed. And she literally says, among the stranger things that happened at this absolutely chaotic conference, the only part of this tweet I will agree, was that I met and had a surprisingly nice chat with a certain David Starkey, then watched him intellectually demolish a room full of young, ultra-right Christian conservatives at their inaugural event. Seriously, my jaw was on the floor. You don't have to be politically aligned to appreciate a demonstration of extreme competence. And besides, they deserved it. And I was watching Penny the entire time. Her mouth was the soy face. No. The only thing that David Starkey did say is that he was hosted by Orthodox Conservatives, but he doesn't like the idea of an Orthodox Conservatism because he believes conservatism is inductive and it shouldn't be handed down, which is a totally valid point. And Joseph played it off to his credit and said, yeah, well, I suppose we'll get our graphic designers on the name rebrand, but thank you, Professor Starkey. I really appreciate contributions. So took it with total humility. Laurie Penny was there going like she was looking for a bloody vegan chicken nugget. So, but again, listen, don't let these people in.
Sausage.
Yeah, well, not with that haircut. Anyway, so next on to the PM's keynote speech, which you can find a transcription of here. And the actual video is banal and boring because she paused with ridiculous length waiting for applauses that didn't quite come.
Are you saying that Liz Truss has no charisma?
I'm saying that the momentary ability to speech coach her on the campaign trail, whatever happened to her speech coach, whatever alley he's passed out in the last month, she needs him to come back because she's about as charismatic as a dog's chew toy. Then the more interesting part of her speech was when the Greenpeace protesters showed up and interrupted. Greenpeace have actually just taken ownership of this. It wasn't like it was road activists. The question is, again, conservatives, how did these people get in? Because they had to be party members. How did you let them get a party membership and sign up?
Well, they got let in. And look at the ass-eating grins on their faces. These people are children going about smearing crayons and other such things on the wall at their parents' house and then having a nice, cheeky feeling of glee when their parents tell them off because I'm getting attention.
Yeah, but I would just like to point out that conservatives clearly aren't gatekeeping hard enough because you let Laurie Penny into your fringe events. You let these clowns into the main conference hall who took two people's seats who might have wanted to see the Prime Minister speak.
Tony Blair Institute.
what was it? Stonewall.
Council for Social Parliament. Justice, whatever it was.
Why is all of this stuff in there? And it's because the Conservatives have been captured by Blairites. This is our mission statement to turn this around. So,
thank you, David Cameron, for all of the work you've done for this country.
Unfortunately so. Here's why the Greenpeace activists are whining. This gives me a slight bit of hope, perhaps, but maybe it's just copium. King Charles has been told to not go to COP27, according to Liz Truss.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about this.
And Liz Truss apparently isn't going either. Yeah, so the Conservatives might be bucking the green agenda ever so slightly. Even though she brought up net zero in the speech, which is just painfully annoying. She is doing fracking. She is doing North Sea. Kwasi Kwarteng was listening to me on nuclear when the Germans and the EU don't particularly like it. So maybe our energy policy might start becoming a bit more sensible. Here's hoping that we don't all freeze to death in the winter, I suppose. There's a really low bar for silver lining.
That'd be nice to pull that gun away from our head that we've had there for a few years now and stop pulling the trigger.
Yeah. Also, Guardian, stop trying to make me like Liz Truss, because if you go to the next one, why does Liz Truss wear the same outfit as a fictional fascist at her speech? So apparently she looked exactly like a fictional tyrannical dictator who was played by Emma Thompson.
Oh my god, she wore a red dress with shorter sleeves. Oh my god, it's Hitler again.
Well, I'm glad they took a break from comparing it to Thatcher. Apparently Vivian Rook, who is a Nigel Farage meet Katie Hopkins figure, the only female politicians I consider voting for, in the dystopian science fiction miniseries Years and Years, written by our favourite Russell T Davies, set between 2019 and 2034, who follows a far-right populist party amid a increasingly chaotic global affairs scenario trying to claim power. Apparently, she's wearing the V-neck dress when she announces concentration camps coming to Britain, which Liz Truss did not announce in her speech. Surprise, surprise. But, I mean, re-education camps for leftists at this point, which are very comfortable and just educational, of course, probably would go away to improving the country.
And this I've never heard of this Russell T Davies show before, thankfully. So, you know, thank you for introducing me to this knowledge. But this seems to be a summation of that old meme on Twitter that says half of every tweet on this website is people making up a boogeyman in their head and becoming very angry that that boogeyman exists, even though it doesn't. And this just seems like another example of this. Russell T Davies comes up with his ideal evil dictator for England and then goes, oh look, it looks just like all the Tories.
Yeah, it's a bicycle spokes meme of sticking the stick in your own wheel and going, why would Liz Truss do this? There's also the farcical idea that Liz Truss is far right. On opening night, she went to the curry house with the LGBT Conservatives. Now, bear in mind, I know the vice president of the LGBT Conservatives, a guy by the name of Luke. He's not super on board with the trans agenda as of last year.
Oh, at least he's not super on board.
Yeah. He's a nice enough fella. I don't agree with his politics. But then she's here with Ellen Bunbury and a gentleman by the name of Joe Porter, who held a sign upside down at last year's Boris speech. He's such a safe-seater. The problem is, last year at the LGBT cons event, as we reported on, because I was actually the one that gave Callum the sources at the time, little Lotus-eater's Easter egg there, Eleanor thanked Stonewall and Mermaids for buying the booze at last year's event. Now, curiously, they've dropped the Mermaids partnership because Mermaids being investigated for child abuse. So again, Conservatives, please gatekeep the organisations and the company with which you keep. Because even if the LGBT cons magically became more conservative overnight, you are still stained with the brush of associating with literal child abusers. Why don't you not do that, please? Yeah, not great. Let's look at how conservative the LGBT cons event is, shall we?
Sound like any woman I've heard before.
No, well, I'm sure he's just stunning and brave. But this was the Tuesday night final send-off party. This was the official send-off party for that. And Liz Truss went to the last year. So validating it.
I suppose he wasn't leading any kids along holding their hand while he was singing. So, you know, that's the conservative element sorted out.
I'm sure the Drag Queen Story Hour was just the after party. If we go to the next one, the actual party itself had claims of homophobic abuse at the LGBT cons event. People got kicked out for saying the bundle of sticks slur.
Listen, Connor just being there isn't homophobia, okay? He could have been much worse.
So I actually know possibly who got kicked out. And to be fair, he is kind of a scumbag. But at the same time, a lot of this has been capitalised on to then turn around and have the leftists go, see, we always told you the Tories were super homophobic and that. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister is literally cavorting with the group that are sponsored by Stonewall. So the idea that she's far right is again farcical. After this, the head of the LGBT Conservatives for Women put her DMs open, asked for apologies. So I suppose if you did send a horrific slur, send a
if your heart
DM
has repaired itself yet after it was broken in twine.
Like, I think it's non-controversial to say it's not very smart to shout out offensive gay slurs at a gay club at the event.
So sounds
the
funny, same, though.
Well, but but at the same time, is this a profoundly conservative event? Like, I went into the toilets, for example, at a gay club, which probably wasn't the best idea.
I can imagine where this is going.
Well, no, actually.
Sadly.
At the time, I was speaking to Luke, who is the head, and he expressed, you'll see at the end of this segment, sympathy for the day's events that happened to me. And we smelled something horrific, and we turned to our right, and under the toilet door, there was a pool of vomit just steeping out, and someone had passed out in their own sick. How conservative. Lovely.
Well, at the very least, I think that's the, like, getting too drunk, vomiting on yourself, and falling asleep is a relatively usual happenstance when you're on a night out. So at least someone's going to do that, whether no matter the company that you're in. What isn't conservative is the whole celebration of the LGBT with a drag queen singer.
Yeah.
No, I can forgive someone showing themselves up a bit and getting a bit too sloshed.
Yeah, but the androgyny and hedonism is basically the party's fall of Rome position. And what we're seeing is a fraction between the party, not just between the activist space like myself and the Mallard lot, and one of my friends who was possibly being expelled from the party for doing a BBC radio interview of saying, I will not vote for the current government until they lower immigration. And Crispin Blunt MP literally grabbing one of our viewers, by the way, by the lapels and shouting in his face about immigration because he said to Crispin Blunt MP, you don't have to live with the consequence of it. I can't get a house. And Crispin Blunt was shouting at the young man until he walked off. We've now got revolt within the cabinet, funnily enough. So if we go to the next one, Suella Braverman, I want to cut migration to tens of thousands. And she said this, I believe it's to Crispin.
Still too much, but it's a start.
Yeah, well, she's going back to David Cameron's promise. I don't see why you can't just do a moratorium. She said net migration must get back to the tens of thousands in the long term. Suella Braverman said it was her ultimate aspiration to reach the target set by former Prime Minister David Cameron that successive Conservative governments have failed to achieve. She said it would be amazing and my dream to send illegal migrants to Rwanda before Christmas, but that it would take a lot longer to overcome the legal challenges. Can we scrap the Rwanda plan, please? Because it's literally just a disabled Rwandan exchange scheme where they can come over and use
useless.
The NHS. Can we not just deport them to the island of Pitcairn, which we still have dominion over? That would be fantastic.
Or can we just not let them in at all? And if they try and cross the channel, we just send them back over to France or something.
Yeah, exactly. Just happily escort them back and turn around. Also, I don't know if I can say this. Why not? Someone spoke to Jacob Rees-Mogg off the record, and Jacob Rees-Mogg reportedly had dissented against the migration plan. And he said, I just want to thank you for doing that. And he said, due to collective responsibility, I cannot comment, but... and walked off. So Jacob Rees-Mogg is also somewhat on our side. And you will see in the compilation as of probably Monday or Tuesday, Owen Jones chasing off Jacob Rees-Mogg in the background of our introduction. So that was a good little clip that we got.
I always feel that Jacob Rees-Mogg just looks very tired because he's probably having to deal with all of these people constantly. And he's just like, oh God.
Why must I talk to the pause? So let's look at why we're down bad. Let's look at the faction that we're currently fighting. And again, I'd like to clarify. I know Albie very well. Head of Conservatives Against Racism for Equality, which might as well be titled Conservatives Against White People for Communism. I've been with drinks for him. I think his political opinions are garbage, but he's actually quite a nice bloke. Saw him at party conference, wished him well, all that. But his and Calvin's very public long-standing spat represents, I suppose, the ideological schism at the heart of conservatism. So, as Callum covered, Steve Baker at the 2022 group said black conservatives taking the knee and footballers taking the knee isn't an act of solidarity with neo-Marxism. It's a state of solidarity against racism. And it's like, no, you're accepting BLM's presuppositions. And Steve Baker, unfortunately, and I spoke to him, he was actually appreciative that Lotus Eaters was an anti-lockdown outlet and appreciated I'd push back on net zero. But
and I'm sure Steve Baker's, that was it. That was probably as far as it went.
Yeah, his amoral libertarianism has basically led him into the multiculturalist
position. No. Immoral libertarianism. I've got to say, when you're being permissive of this sort of stuff, it does slip over into immorality because what you're doing when you're taking the knee is not a statement of solidarity, it's a statement of fealty to the opposing ideology. You are submitting to what they want.
That's what Calvin's saying, and Calvin's saying we don't need black conservative groups because you don't lay claim to my identity. And Calvin was at the event, he did his own talk with the Mallard, total gentleman, had a great time. So if we go on to the next one, Albie responded to Calvin's tweet and said to him, oh, you're kicking up a fuss about nothing, we need black identity groups and interest groups to represent an electoral constituency.
That's right. We need to segregate the races in the Conservative Party. That's what's going to win us votes.
Yeah, and it's almost exactly like the argument from the Marxists, where they say in order to get a stateless class of society, we need a dictatorship to amass all property. It's like saying in order to get an anti-racist society, we need to be super racist and deepen the racial divisions and create racial subcategories within the party. So then Calvin kicked off and had this interview on GB News, which we won't play a clip of, but I advise you go and watch it. The thing is, when you think like this, Albie, and hopefully you're watching, mate, you lead yourself into stupid tweets like this. If we can just go on to this. The Office for National Statistics found out that Muhammad was the most popular baby name in 4 out of 9 English regions. And Alfie was celebrating it. And he said, "Conservatives can either lean into demographic change and win over voters who share our values of family, aspiration, enterprise and self-reliance by engaging with communities, disproving the trope that we're all racists and preventing a modern inclusive Britishness, or not. Okay, if you make a tent so broad, the polls will collapse. And unfortunately, the Muslim world does not agree with you on the values of family because they, including you, would throw gay people off of roofs and also commit female genital mutilation. So they're not much in the way of the traditional family or a peaceful family life. Aspiration, enterprise and self-reliance. Check the Muslim world's irrigation systems or their roads or anything like that. They don't have much of the Protestant work ethic. And by engaging with communities, they're not communities, they're satellite states within the countries. And if you looked at Birmingham, for example, lots of the street signs were in Bangladeshi. They do not want to integrate. So you're not going to convince people who have an imperialistic mindset of Wahhabism, who actively hate the British Empire and all that Britain stands for. You're not going to win them over. Instead, we have to point out that mass migration has been a massive detriment to our country, both materially and culturally. We are not going to win these people over. We just need to reduce the numbers. They can have their terrible country somewhere else. I'd like to live in Britain. Thank you very much."
I refuse to eat the poisoned apple. You can't make me.
Yes. So if we go just on to the next one, LGBT cons also came in against Calvin. This was Luke. I like Luke, but this is, again, silly. Calvin,
why are you friends with all of these people, Connor? Because they're making me question things. Your judgment is on trial here.
They're nice people and I'm a Christian, so I believe in forgiveness. Calvin, there is a nation ideology in politics that our immutable characteristics like sexuality should define who we are and what we believe. It believes the UK is carved into victims and oppressors. It robs us of our agency. We can fight through these organisations. No, you cannot. If you create organisations based entirely on those immutable characteristics, you are singing from the left's hymn sheet. Instead, make it a subordinate part of your identity and not an involuntarily politicised part of your identity. And just propose sensible policies that allow us to live in peace. That would be wonderful.
I'm sorry, this is the cuties reasoning. Oh, we must fight child sexual exploitation by making a film in which we exploit child sexual
exploitation. Yeah. So the lesson there is to break through the managerial paradigm. The Conservatives were not doing that. Their bubble will be electorally massively burst. And their complete inability to match up sudden populist rhetoric, like being pro-free speech, to reality is why you result in instances like this. We'll finish with this, shall we? Just onto the next tweet. Yeah. Outside Conservative Party conference, I was threatened to be arrested for a public order offence because I said our mutual most hated LGBT plus scholar, the foremother of queer theory, Gail Rubin, was insidious. And I said the word insidious. A copper marched over and started shouting at me and said he will arrest me if I keep talking. We have the full footage. Thankful to Rory, our wonderful cameraman. The woman in question there has even tweeted about it. So we've got a lot of evidence to back us up. We have the police officer's number. We will be filing a formal complaint, and you'll be able to see that full footage on our website on Monday when we have Harry Miller from Fair Cop to come in to interrogate this.
What an intimidating figure of a man right there. He definitely wasn't abusing his power for kicks or anything.
I will not comment to not compromise the investigation. However, I will say that the Conservatives certainly aren't using their power for good. So if we have to step in and clean up the country on your behalf, I'm willing to do that in this instance. And if we have to do it after a crushing Labour defeat because you literally let them inside your conference, well, don't revoke my membership, but you're going to want to listen to me when you have a massive electoral loss. It's the fault of the neolibs. It's the fault of the reigning party at the moment. And we will clear them out and clean this stuff up.
All right, then. Strong words. I like it. Let's move on, shall we, to the forbidden journo secrets. That's right. We're going to give you all of the juicy details that the journalists don't want you to know, which you probably have already guessed, because it's all very obvious, and that is most mainstream journalists are, in fact... Are you ready for this? If you've got a drink or soup or anything, warm, you might want... That's right, Connor. You might want to take it away, okay? Journalists are a bunch of rich kids.
You're kidding.
I know. And did you know they might be the beneficiaries of nepotism?
Never.
I know. I, for one, am shocked. And before I get into it, there's something relevant that Josh and I spoke about recently on A Contemplations, where we were talking about sneaky journalists' rhetorical tricks and going through a bunch of articles and just examining the ways in which they manipulate language to manipulate your brain. You may not notice it, but your brain did. And one of the rhetorical tricks it seems that they like to pull is pretending that they're not a bunch of spoiled rich brats. And they do this by a number of different means, including just having most of their personal history wiped off of the internet and kept that way, which, you know, for a lot of these people isn't how they treat the subjects of their journalistic investigations. So very, very interesting. But this started off, and I do need to thank, as always, Binary Surfer for tagging me in this. He's always excellent. He's well worth a follow on Twitter if you're aware of him and if you haven't followed already, where he said, F me, eye-opener is understanding this. It needs publicizing. But shockingly enough, the tweet was deleted by the tweet author. And we'll see why that was, because it doesn't seem that it was simply this thread that was deleted itself. Right. But thankfully, somebody did manage to archive it. Because what this thread is going through, if we go to the next link, please, John, thank you. What this thread is going through is a number of examples of very, very high-profile mainstream journalists who are either trying to keep their secret family history, that being that they're rich millionaires or billionaires, as Bernie Sanders would say. Well, pre-2016, Bernie Sanders would say. Either that or just keep their information off of the internet altogether. And it's very interesting, the information that this particular Twitter user, Neville the Cat, Fear the Floof, a very good boy if ever I've seen one, has managed to unearth. And you can check out a lot of this information, and trust me, you will have to do some digging to find the information that he's going to go through here, but it does all seem to be above board and check out. And it will also include reference to one of our old favourites, our old pal, Taylor Lorenz.
Oh, for God's sake, he's subjecting me to this old crone again.
Yes, and old crone is more accurate than you might guess.
Because
we now know your birth date, Taylor. At least we don't know your address, like poor old libs of TikTok, though. And once again, Neville the Cat. I think he is back on Twitter right now, but his account mysteriously got completely nuked after posting this big thread. F's in the chats, boyos.
It's just insane that we genuinely have anonymous cat accounts on Twitter providing more reliable information than that strange fired eunuch on CNN whose show is literally called Reliable Sources, or was, I suppose.
What, you mean Brian Stelter?
Yeah, it's just weird that we actually have more accurate information from cat accounts than we do these multi-million dollar corporate conglomerations giving us the narrative.
Yes, when the internet really started to kick off in the late 90s, early 2000s, I don't think anybody saw this coming. No. But, you know, the cards fell where they did. So let's take a look through this, shall we? So he starts off by saying, one of the most fascinating things about the modern age we live in is the population of journalists almost exclusively being from mega-rich families, and the fact they have done such a good job of hiding it from the internet. The most extreme case of this is our old friend, and this is probably the most well-publicized one that most of you will know about, is Carlos Maza, a name that a lot of people haven't found relevant for a while, but he makes a great case study in this. Right out of the Wake Forest University, he worked for Vox, pushing extreme left-wing views and targeting anyone on the right, no matter how poor or middle class. What almost no one knew was that he was a billionaire. And I know that I think he was like a billionaire or a millionaire, whichever one. And we'll see also through this tweet thread that there doesn't seem to be a single redeeming photograph of this man. Every single photo I've seen of him is just completely ridiculous and makes him look like a nincompoop. I think that's a good term that people don't use enough anymore. And they carry on. What's amazing about this is almost no one knew. Example of the photo right there.
Yeah.
Smug socialist face. That knew that his mother and stepfather were tech billionaires with multiple mansions, yachts, and private planes. And Maza himself was raised in a $10.8 million mansion in Boca Raton, Florida. Until his termination at Vox, there was no Google result that you could get that could tell you anything on his background. Nothing. Complete memory hole. For almost 10 years, he was able to use his massive platform to cancel anyone he saw fit and to abuse his power unchecked. And once again, this is just a reiteration. This man thinks he's better than you. Mm. He doesn't just think that it's his journalistic duty to reveal the truth. He believes it's his journalistic duty to pass moral judgment on those he sees as his lessers. And sadly, being that he's technically part of a what you could describe as an aristocratic class in America, as close as they have to one, he seems to view anything that's relevant or important to those poorer than him as simply being... And despite the fact of the rhetoric and imagery we can see here, sorry, Grandma, we're communists now, despite putting those sorts of ideas forward, he definitely seems to be the sort of person who saw himself above the ideas and whatever was important to the dirty proles beneath him.
So did Marx, though. He leached himself off Engels. He had plenty of money. He banged his maid and threw his kids out
on
the street.
It's a theme that we find through this.
The interesting thing is, as well, same case with Sama Amanat, who is the person that created Ms. Marvel over at Marvel Studios.
Oh, no surprise there. Let me guess, she's the daughter of some wealthy oil baron from Saudi Arabia?
No. So she went to college and got poached by Virgin Comics straight out, despite never having picked up a comic book in her life, and then became almost immediately chief creative officer at Marvel. But one of her,
meritocracy, folks. We live in a meritocracy, I swear.
It might be one of her brothers that's deeply involved with the Clinton Foundation.
Of course.
She gets like a Medal of Freedom from the Obamas, and she goes to address the White House, and it's like, ah, so it's
so
just a new racial aristocracy.
15 years from now, she's going to disappear under mysterious circumstances.
I know nothing about the whereabouts of various emails, Hillary. Please don't kill me.
But given that, like, Maza was fired from Vox ages and ages ago, you might have forgotten some of the things that he got up to back in the day, because this guy was quite influential. And, for instance, if we go to the next link, you can see back in the day, back in 2019, tried to get Stephen Crowder investigated by YouTube for offensive speech that Crowder had supposedly directed at Maza, surprise, surprise, is a gay man. I know. Shock, horror.
Well, his tag was at gay wonk.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And it says in this article here, Maza, the host of Vox's media literacy series.
That's ironic.
Yes, strike three. I don't know if that was directed at Maza or me. Accused Crowder on Twitter this week of repeated and overt attacks on my sexual orientation and ethnicity. He said that the pundit had called him an anchor baby and a lispy queer. And he said that he is now the subject of harassment. Well, all I'm going to say, Maza, is if the shoe fits.
That's terrible. It's reprehensible. How could he possibly...
If the shoe fits, and having nasty words, having nasty words thrown at you is so awful. But I tell you what isn't awful, which is encouraging people to get milkshakes, which is never proven to be a terrible thing to do ever, and definitely isn't part of a slippery slope and encouraging far leftist violence.
Well, they literally put ready setting concrete in some of them at.
No, they didn't. Portland. Fake news.
Did they not? Did they not?
No, I think they did.
Oh, of course they did.
Yeah, of course they did. As we can see, Tim Pool back in the day pointing out, milkshake them all, humiliate them at every term, which is obviously just an encouragement to violence. Whether they want to... It's like when someone like Hassan Piker will talk about, we need to, I don't know, kill this person in a video game. We know what you're doing. You can say milkshake them all, but we know what you're actually encouraging. You're cheering on the bike lock madman that was at Berkeley, for instance, trying to bash people's skulls in for having opposing political opinions.
Well, when Marx and Engels both in separate texts said, we want a revolution so bloody it makes the French look like child's play, I'm going to believe you when you call for genocide.
I know, but taking people at their word is something you only do when it's rightists and not leftists. But anyway, let's move back onto the thread, shall we? So if we go back on, there we go, and we'll carry on. So it wasn't until he was fired from Vox for being too much of a left-wing extremist, let that one sink in, and he began his failed YouTube career, did anyone do any digging into just how this guy was able to afford some of the most expensive real estate in New York, with no income. Mm. Very interesting circumstances to find yourself in. A billionaire journalist who went to Christopher Columbus High School and Wake Forest University was able to cosplay working class socialists attacking poor and working class people for years without anyone knowing his real background.
Carl and I recently covered that book as well, How Fascism Works, on the weekend segment, and it is just communist tripe.
Oh, I've not watched that one yet, although I have actually covered. I remember when it came out, there was the Twitter thread talking about, oh, you just need to do this. And it was basically just saying, people who disagree with me are evil, kill them, which is kind of what you expect.
It said fascism operates on us and them narratives. Now let me talk to you about the proletariat bourgeoisie.
Now, we on the left, we would never do anything like that. We're just on the right side of history.
And you bash the fash or not.
Mm-hmm. But let's carry on, shall we, to our favourite, Taylor Lorenz.
Oh, okay.
Here she is, that shining, glowing, youthful face.
Look at those bloody jowls, God almighty.
I know, she's got kind of a weird, saggy face.
She does. She looks like she's been like a candle left by a radiator for too long.
We should probably go stop before we violate terms of service.
I'm sorry, stunning and brave trans woman.
Yeah. you can hardly almost tell. But Taylor Lorenz might actually be an even worse offender of this hypocrisy. While also born to fabulous wealth and privilege, she has the family power to keep her past off the internet even after it became known. She can actually get it removed forever from the internet. What's amazing about her is we know she was born in New York City, raised in the richest zip code of Connecticut, and we also know that she attended a Swiss private boarding school and graduated from Hobart and William Smith College. But that's about it. While this woman of wealth and privilege can dox even the poorest, weakest, least powerful people on the internet, and I'm not going to say that Libs of TikTok was the poorest or weakest or least powerful, but she certainly did dox Libs of TikTok when it was, if you were trying to, you know, just criticize Libs of TikTok for her work, that was not necessary. It was an obvious intimidation play that she was doing. But she, she can do all of that, publish their private information, address, workplaces, and phone numbers. She can apparently get anything about herself wiped from the internet forever. And one of the most interesting examples of this, because you can see these images, you know, we don't know who the parents are, don't know siblings, we don't know a bunch of details. If you click on the actual tweet itself, it won't show up. But if we go to her Wikipedia, one of the most interesting examples of this, because if you just scroll through, you'll see there's no family details or anything, but look at the birth date.
Yeah.
It's almost like she's an archaeological discovery.
Yeah.
You know, you look back on Wikipedia entries for people like Socrates, and we have a more narrow
window
when they were born. Whereas Taylor Lorenz, it's like, I don't know, we need to count the rings or something. Yeah, maybe 84, maybe 87.
Are you trying to carbon date her, Harry? Stop trying to date her. Stop it.
Oh,
stop
my God, I'm sorry. I know. Criticizing women just means I'm sexually attracted to them. Oh, my incel frustrations leaking out.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the wrong
wrong way to put it. Can I just point out slightly, if you can just scroll up, John, if you look at the opening paragraph, she worked as a social media editor for the Daily Mail. Now, everyone that accuses the Daily Mail of being a right-wing newspaper, as we just did with our segment on the Conservative Party conference, entryism is cancer. Stop letting these people into your institutions. They will corrupt them from within. Right. Stop it.
I think that the best way to say it is just that a newspaper is only as right-wing as the contributors.
Yeah.
So when the Daily Mail, when they have a Peter Hitchens column, for instance, then yeah, that's right-wing, whatever. But when they've got mostly this, and I mean, the Daily Mail is mainly a gossip rag.
Oh, the wall of shame on the side when you're reading about a massive
geopolitical
event
to visit their website.
I have to hear about Demi Rose's plastic breasts. Fantastic. Cheers for that.
I know, but if we carry on back to the thread now. So Neville continues by asking, how would a TikTok journalist be able to get her history wiped off of the internet forever? Now, hold on as we go into the family of Lorenz, and you can't find all of this information on the internet without much effort. Taylor Lorenz was born into a mega-rich developer, Walter R. Lorenz and Anne Lorenz, and raised in a $5.7 million mansion. Her sister is Brooke Lorenz of CNN,
and I checked
that out, and it's true, and I was not aware of that. So it seems that the family sort of may have herded them all into a very particular career path. I wonder if it was in any way to promote their own political views in big mainstream places.
Very young global leader, World Economic Forum vibes.
Yes, but it's her uncle that's the big story here. Taylor Lorenz's mum and uncle, God, were mega rich. Well, she does say she's got PTSD and trauma, so her uncle were mega rich children of a very powerful politician, and R. MacDonald, her uncle, is the owner and founder of the Wayback Machine Internet Archive. Mm-hmm. I will say I can't find information on this.
But... I did hear that before.
Oh, so you have heard of that before.
I have heard of that before.
But it is interesting as well how it ties into some of the privilege that she seems to get from the Wayback Machine. Trying to find info about any of these people is nearly impossible, which is true. Mm. It's very, very difficult. Taylor Lorenz even had her uncle exempt her Twitter account from the Wayback Machine. So once she deletes her tweets, they are wiped from the internet forever, which is why it's good to screenshot her tweets, ladies and gentlemen. They can get rid of the tweet, they can get rid of the archive of the tweet, but you'll still have the screenshot. So for the record, she was born on October 21st, 1984. In New York City.
Ironic, considering she's erasing the past.
Yeah, which is making her 37 years old and will make her 38 in a few days. So for those of you wondering where the carbon dating really placed her at, we've got a definitive answer, finally. But it's very interesting how she's able to exert all of this influence and has all of this family power behind her, and we, the simple plebs on the street, are not privy to this information. And you would think that this would be relevant when, as I've said, these types of people are the new aristocracy, considering themselves better than us, feeding us the information that allows people not only to make informed decisions politically, but moral judgments. Once again, these people think they are morally better than you. They think they are the guiding light for your new morality. And I think that that's pretty disgusting. Moving on, Ben Collins of NBC News has leveraged his power and family wealth to become one of the most powerful internet hall monitors of our age, while Taylor Lorenz can get her wiki page wiped. Ben doesn't even have one.
He's got those like jaws on Michael Myers' eyes. You know, a doll's eyes, the devil's eyes, just dead. Like a Coraline character.
I would be very interested to see the contents of his fridge, I agree. and you can search him. He doesn't have a Wikipedia entry. Very interesting. And they carry on. The lead in disinformation journalist at the biggest network news platform in the United States has not even a blurb that pops up in his first 100 Google results. What we do know is he's a 47-year-old man who went to Emerson College, which cost a whopping $75,000 a year to attend in today's dollars. A very private, very exclusive, buy-your-way-into-college founded for in 1880 for rich white people to buy an exclusive education, so just another rich kid. And he's built a brand around targeting citizens who work against Democrats and labeling them domestic terrorists. Interestingly enough, when I did look him up, most of what came up was his work surrounding the Jan 6 protests.
Of course it was. So he's got no Google bio when you search it at all?
No. I think he's got a Twitter account which has maybe two or three tweets on it.
Right, that's strange. Like, even I've got that. Mine's wrong because it says I'm a footballer. But like, if someone as low profile as me can have that, then the leading disinformation journalist in America doesn't have it and nobody raises an eyebrow.
Very, very interesting, isn't it? And once again, this is a man who, as part of his work with January 6th, and I don't want to say too much here, has helped the persecution of many people who are still being held under very, very liberally applied charges.
Yeah,
shall
no habeas corpus whatsoever.
For the most part, he targets the poor and middle class, the weak, the people with no resources and no way to fight back or clear their name once smeared. He continues when we go further down after we've moved past Ben Collins, like, for instance, Anderson Cooper here, you can do in one tweet. He's a Vanderbilt.
Right.
He's a Vanderbilt. I mean, obviously, he comes from incredibly old money. And then we can go down one and we can see Chris Cuomo. Do we need to explain any more?
No.
These are the people giving you the news, giving you your opinions, telling your family members how they should think about you, telling your family members the sorts of talking points they should throw at you when you're at the Christmas dinner table, creating division in your family, and they're getting rich off of it. They're living in their gated communities. They're coming from their family backgrounds that allow them immense wealth and power that mean that they can just get any information they want taken off the internet whenever they want. And don't tell me for an instance that Chris Cuomo wouldn't be able to pull a few strings and get most information that he didn't want online taken off Google search results.
It's a shame he couldn't get the news about his producers being alleged paedophiles not able to come out, isn't it? What a shame that is.
Well, I think he was a bit late on that one, sadly.
Yeah, a little bit out the gate. My only comment, I suppose, is when the left that spang on endlessly in postmodern fashion about how everyone's philosophy only serves their own power and ambitions.
It's projection.
Believe them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if we carry on, like I said, the account itself, Neville the Cat, who was a very, very good boy, seems to have been put down prematurely. Right. We've got Radical Liberation in responding to some people pointing out that the tweet thread got taken down and then saying that the account got taken down as well, saying, you're right, the whole account got destroyed. He had 25,000 followers.
Right.
And immediately after posting this, within a few hours, gone.
Mm. Suspicious.
Very interesting. It's almost as though somebody didn't want this information out there. And as I said, we've got an archive, but other people have been reposting screenshots of the thread because I think a few people were clever enough to see this and go, somebody's not going to want this out there.
Thank you for your service.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, all of you diligent screenshotters out there. And then he also had a new account put up, and then it was gone again.
Ah, though to be fair,
I checked this.
The name...
true.
What's the video version if you are listening in?
Just to say, I checked this morning and his account was back, but it might have gone again by the time that this is broadcast, so I don't know. But this is just your friendly... Our McDonald. Yeah. Taylor Lorenz just saw your NYT piece this evening on Facebook. I did not see this. Very interesting. So that seems to be private tweets. This seems to confirm things. Yes. Television archive, internet archive, offering journalists. Yep. All seems to check out to me.
Yep.
But this is just your daily reminder that journos are not people.
All right. Speaking of the inhuman, I suppose. So, Harry, have you seen any of the recent Jeffrey Dahmer drama on Netflix?
The missus has watched some of it and said it was pretty brutal and horrifying to watch parts of, and also that a lot of people have been complaining about how brutal it is, and I can only say that you're watching a television show based around the exploits of a
serial killer. Pedophile. Yeah.
So what did you expect?
Yeah, well, I didn't expect the amount of bloody wokery in it, and I know wokery
you've
is
kind of
a tiled,
got to expect it nowadays.
Well, yeah, I know it's an exhausted phrase, but wow, the race politics in this is really heavy, and I've got a lot of people trying to justify it, but you can't really justify a racial political message if it didn't exist in the first place and it's literal fiction. So it turns out most of it's made up.
What a surprise. Can I just imagine the creative process coming up with this show where you go, what if we do a fictionalized retelling of the exploits of Jeffrey Dahmer? And the executive producer just goes, but how will this help black people?
Black people? Well, despite all of the attempts to make it insufferably politically correct, it turns out the monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, has transgressed the unquestionable, imperishable integrity of the LGBTQAAIP+ community. So let's examine today why.
Did it suggest that gay people can do bad things too?
No, it didn't.
Oh, really?
No.
It goes even
we'll
deeper.
We'll get into the ideology, poor choice of words, of that later. So let's examine why this is propagandistic nonsense. If you'd like to learn why Harry's missus, for example, likes true crime so much, you can watch the recent contemplations
and
we did with Josh.
And probably why your missus likes true crime so much as well.
Yeah. So we actually did one as a half a profile on Ted Bundy and his chameleonic charisma, and then Josh went into the literature on the Dark Triad and its attractiveness. And in this, he read a paper called The Dark Side of the Rainbow and pointed out why... surveys of lesbian, gay, and bisexual people have higher dark triad traits. So
that's very interesting.
If you are someone who bats for the home team, be careful out there who you bring home. Anyway, speaking of which, the LGBTQ content label that Netflix has been applying to its content decided to be tagged on the Jeffrey Dahmer series.
I'm pretty based.
Masked off moment. There was a lot of whining from Pink News on this because there's always whining over at Pink News. No more Jeffrey Dahmer shows. He is being turned into an icon slowly and surely by people that think his story needs to be told over and over again, a user on social media said. It's insulting and horrible, not only to the LGBTQ+ community, but to all, in my opinion.
Right, okay, let me just say this. So-called LGBTQ+ community, if that is your real name. I know it's actually Pi, but anyway. Right, let me just ask this. If you don't... I'll say this. If you don't want to keep being associated with these people, stop making it so that, say, like Pennywise and other literal horror monsters are considered gay and queer icons. I remember... Do you remember when It Chapter 2 came out?
Yes.
And the opening scene, taken straight from the book, he kills a gay guy.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, gay Twitter was furious. I thought Pennywise was an ally! Why do you want Pennywise as an ally?
You sound like Ben Affleck in Batman v Superman. Pennywise, why did you say that name? Yeah, just stop dressing up as a Babadook and Pennywise on bloody RuPaul's Drag Race, which I didn't know until I had to cover it for a video that you'll be seeing later, so
I'll
hold my tongue on that. So yeah, Monster, the Jeffrey Dahmer story, outlines the chilling acts of murder, necrophilia, and cannibalism orchestrated by Dahmer, who later became known as the Milwaukee Cannibal. From 1978 to 1991, Dahmer is known to have killed at least 17 men, many of whom were underage and people of color. For some reason, they're putting like pedophilia on par with dating and killing black people, so that's a really weird conflation. It tells a story through the lives of the victims and focuses on how systemic racism and complacency by Milwaukee authorities allowed Dahmer to continue his killing spree. So the actual narrative of the show is all about how the police kept letting them down, the police were super racist. What it doesn't exactly examine very well is, if we go on to the next one, a viewer actually sent me this article from Unheard, why perhaps the gay lifestyle might have, or at least the LGBTQ plus community lifestyle, not the Douglas Murray gay men lifestyle, might have contributed to making these men vulnerable. I'm just going to read some quotes from this article and see if you get where I'm thinking here. Why gay men ignored Me Too. An explicit tweet about social etiquette at a condomless gay orgy recently went viral as the mostly heterosexual public grappled with the sheer perversity of what they were reading. It is unethical to attend a no-loads refuse used pimped out cum dump event if the bottom has blocked you on Twitter, even though you've never talked to him and they have no idea why? Question mark. Twitter freaked out. What exactly is a pimped out cum dump event? How strict is this no loads refused policy? Is it an anonymous block really an undumpable load offense? While this dude's attempt to grapple with the social niceties of the orgy might seem a particularly extreme example, the online fora it attracted does seem to reflect a cultural misunderstanding of gay male sexuality. It is deemed problematic, an attitude that is often accompanied by a desire to do something about it.
This reminds me of something. This reminds me of just gargling loads of piss at my 15-man orgy, birthday thing. Orgy.
And why did I get monkeypox? Maybe it's the consequences of my own actions.
You can't ask men, gay men, to stop having sex with one another. AIDS didn't stop us, so monkeypox sure as hell won't.
I'm going to interject an interlude here before I read more of these comments and just point out that none of us are excusing the reprehensible actions of Jeffrey Dahmer. We're
obviously
just like
not.
We wouldn't excuse the actions of an evil rapist following a woman home at night. However, we do think women should be armed with guns or pepper spray, and we think that we shouldn't allow women to walk home alone. That's why we order them a cab or make sure they text us that they get home safe. So in the same way that you cannot blame the victim for what these monsters do, you can tell potential victims you can't control how many monsters there are out there, and maybe take lifestyle precautions that won't leave you vulnerable to this kind of thing.
And
I don't know.
Sadly, in the UK, it's far, like you've just referenced there, it's far too difficult to be able to defend yourself legitimately. And in the UK, for those of our American viewers who don't know, we're not even legally allowed to carry pepper spray, for instance.
Yeah. Or a pocket knife or anything. Yeah, but in this case, when you have comparable strength levels, maybe don't get really drugged up and drunk and go home with a guy that you don't know what he's going to do to you in his locked apartment.
Mate, like, AIDS wouldn't stop them, so monkeypox and serial killers won't either.
So, soon after the Me Too movement kicked off in 2017, there were calls to look beyond violence of men against women to include the perceived toxic sexual norms among gay men. Camila Martinez-Granata wrote in Vice about pervasive sexual harassment in gay bars, where getting groped and squeezed without warning is practically a rite of passage. She called for the fostering of, quote, two truly safe spaces in queer nightlife, ones that rejected the, quote, normalization of sexual harassment. A year later, Michael Segalov wrote in The Guardian that, quote, the conversation around consent for gay men has been stifled. Some of the statistics cited in these articles depict an epidemic of sexual assault within gay spaces. Half of gay men in both the UK and US say they've experienced sexual touching without their consent. Researchers have also noticed the normalization of, quote, sexual coercion among gay men, defined broadly as, quote, a range of ways in which may be forced or pressured to have unwanted sex. Examples include pressure to accept undesired top or bottom positions for the satisfaction of one's sexual partner. Gay bars and clubs known for their, quote, seedy undercurrent because of their primary function, much more so than heterosexual spaces, is to enable sexual conquest. This is why the presence of women in gay bars is seen as so ruinous, and why the rise of hookup culture like Grindr threaten the long-term viability of these supposed, quote, safe spaces. So, safe spaces to be sexually harassed. Weird. The perennial art of, quote, cruising, seeking out strange men in sex clubs, saunas, and public toilets, once rationalized as a form of self-hatred, is now clearly misunderstood as simply what many gay men like to do.
Well, clearly understood. You said misunderstood. Sorry, just to correct.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
My point is, Dharma used bathhouses to drug people until they threw him out. He used gay clubs to pick up potential victims. He was literally cruising down streets, as was John Wayne Gacy, picking up vulnerable young men who were drugged out in bus stations or, according to academics, had been thrown out of their houses because their parents weren't tolerant enough of them being gay. Do you think there might be a small problem with the promiscuity and drug-taking in the gay male community that might, just might, leave you susceptible to the worst people on earth?
Gay men didn't do nothing.
Frustratingly, but then if we keep telling them that, then
it's society's fault, Connor. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, frustrating. If they're going to keep getting themselves killed, which
and
I don't
just
want.
Just to confirm as well, all of that was listed out there is after the destigmatization of homosexuality.
Yes,
in
it's post-sexual revolution. And he's actually saying in this that the Me Too movement is implacable to gay men because they actually kind of like the roughness. So all of these things, like the sexual harassment and the groping, is just part and parcel of gay culture.
Well, I say this a bit. I lived in Manchester for a bit, yeah. Okay, and I knew plenty of somewhat degenerate gay people, and I will say, kind of checks out.
Frustrating.
Sadly.
So just to set the stage for then looking at the factual inaccuracies in the Dharma drama, I watched all 10 episodes.
I'm sorry.
From the start, Netflix opens with a clip of supposed police brutality and profiling. It capitalizes the B in black in all the subtitles. Tony, the deaf man, who is also black, that Dharma kills in probably the most tragic episode. He had layers of intersectional critique for his race, his sexuality, and his disability. It was almost an entirely deaf episode with sign language and subtitles and lots of effeminate gay subculture language, which
like
I found difficult.
That sounds like an interesting filming technique.
It was a very interesting filming technique. The only thing is, it was clearly given prominence because of the different layers of identity persecution that they were trying to blame on Dharma, even though he didn't kill him because he was gay or disabled.
It was done in service of the message rather than in service of the medium.
Yeah. Then the role of the police officers, there was a black police officer who was interrogating him and said, "You didn't target these men because they were in low-income neighborhoods that you lived around. You moved there purposefully to kill black men. You racist." And Dharma was like, "No." And in real life, and I'm not defending Jeffrey Dharma, I'm merely trying to
see what you're making
depict,
us do, Netflix.
Yeah, we're trying to accurately depict the reasons for his chosen victims, hopefully to prevent it. He just said, "I thought they were beautiful." He had a taste for non-white men, so whatever. Then there were the other side of it with the police officers who failed to pick up on the fact that there was a 14-year-old boy he had drilled the side of his head into and poured acid in there. They thought he was his boyfriend, and they just made them out to be really homophobic and hating Asian people. And they actually had police officers make anonymous threatening calls to the Laotian family after their son had died, even though that never happened either.
Wait. So you're telling me that the whole thing is like, yeah, Dharma was gay and he was a serial killer, but don't you know he was a racist?
Yeah, the entire show. And this is why it's so warped. The progressive stack, much like the German cannibal, for example, who was the consensual cannibal, the progressive sexual morality of Foucault, who literally raped young boys in graveyards to the point of where he died of AIDS, cannot argue against some of the things Dharma does. They can argue against the murder. They cannot argue against the rape and the cannibalism, because in the consent-based sexual morality that the left have, those are not evil. So they actually have to slap the racist label on him to make him reprehensible. It is utterly, utterly insane.
Netflix going, "No one would think this was a bad guy unless he was a racist. I mean, yeah. Come on. What if the guy consented to being murdered?"
Yeah, and then the other villains in the show are cops or co-workers of Glenda, his next-door neighbor.
So
who
the
says,
sorts of people who in the real world were dedicated to tracking him down.
Pretty much, yeah. Glenda's co-worker complains about her doing an interview on the Dharma case, saying, "This is a very conservative business with a very conservative clientele. You shouldn't have said those things." And they try and make Jesse Jackson look really good, even though he's a massive race hustler.
I mean, you know, good luck to you.
Yeah, exactly. So if we can just highlight one small problem with all this stuff. It's all made up. Loads of it's made up. Turns out. So we go on to the next one. One small problem. It's just basically all fiction. This is everything Netflix's Dharma series got wrong about the case. So, for example, its lead character, Glenda Cleveland, she didn't exist.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a good start.
So, Glenda Cleveland was actually based on two people, right? The real-life Glenda, there was a woman who lived across the street from Jeffrey Dharma and phoned in about the kid who has his head drilled in, right? And she did tell the police, "Oh, I think he might be a kid." And the police said, "Oh, it's a tiff with his boyfriend. He looks older." They depicted the police in the thing of basically walking to his apartment, seeing blood and like a drill everywhere and just going, "That's some gay stuff." And it's like, okay.
That was accidentally based?
Yeah. And then he didn't have a next door neighbor. that looked into it. He actually had a neighbour lived multiple doors down from him. There was no complaint about smell. There was no complaint about noise. Nobody knew of the murder the whole time, which is the implication here that they used to blame the police in ignoring black voices. It was another woman called Pamela Bass, who Dahmer had tried to give a human meat sandwich to, but she didn't eat it. Yeah.
Fair play to her instincts there. Yeah. Don't accept a strange meat sandwich.
That's also Ghost of the Gay Men that we were giving advice to earlier. But the entire framing device of this narrative is bollocks. Didn't happen. Sorry, there wasn't a black neighbour who always knew and was overlooked by police because of her race. She didn't live next to him. She wasn't smelling the smell. You could talk about police incompetence of allowing a 14-year-old boy to be killed, thinking that he was an older man and that they're having a lover's quarrel. That's a totally fine criticism. But I don't want to be lied to. I'd rather you accurately depicted things like this, because otherwise we can't fight horrific criminals like this and profile them properly.
Yeah, I think one of the most insidious things about this is that, sadly, as much as I would like for it to not be the case, a lot of people do take their understanding of the world from films and television.
Yep.
And they shouldn't. Yep. You shouldn't do that, because it's written by somebody who may have an agenda and may want to trick you in some way. But loads of people do. And most people will watch this and go, oh my God, this must have been how it actually happened. Can you believe that they just didn't listen to the poor black people?
Yeah. Yeah, and they also apparently didn't listen to the Laotian people, even though the judge was not discriminating against the Laotian father in the show, in real life, because he didn't actually attend the hearing where Dahmer initially got a sexual assault charge on his first son, and then the second son was killed. So they just had him be there and the judge be racist, because say, oh, I can't understand you when you don't speak English. There were two police officers who didn't actually, unlike the series portray them, get Officer of the Year outstanding service medals for overlooking the Laotian boy who was 14 being taken back to Dahmer's flat. They were suspended. They were later reinstated, which you can obviously argue isn't good, but they didn't get accolades and rewarded for their poor behavior. So it's just another lie. Tony Hughes and Jeffrey Dahmer actually knew each other for 2 years before he was killed. So the deaf man didn't know him for a short amount of time. It wasn't a really intense and tragic relationship. It was actually, they knew him for a couple of years. They just omitted that fact. Again, they're just changing things, so it calls the entire narrative into question. And Glinda Cleveland's daughter in this, she gets arrested at one point for knocking a man's camera out of his hand because he's posing for Jeffrey Dahmer photos on the steps of the building.
Because cops be racist?
Yeah, never happened. No record of arrest. Didn't happen. They just made it up. So if we go on to the next one, literally the journalist who broke the story says there's loads wrong in it. She says, I walked up to Dahmer's apartment, stuck my head in because you're a journalist. I guess the thing is that was strange that it didn't look strange. She said the officers slowly began to understand the magnitude of the crime scene when they discovered Polaroids of victims in various stages of dismemberment. But she didn't find the smell of a dead body. She'd been covering crime scenes, so she knew the smell of a dead body. All it smelt was like chemicals. So again, myth busts the idea that the neighbors always knew and the police were overlooking them just because they're racist. She also said she used to work in communications for the Milwaukee Police Department, and she said that the depiction of police officers as racist and homophobic was incorrect. I've spent a lot of time with them, interviewing the people who are on the scene. Again, this is a dramatization, but at a time when it is not exactly easy for law enforcement to get trust and buy-in from this community, it's not a very helpful representation. In the first 5 minutes of the episode, you have Glinda Cleveland knocking on his door. None of that ever happened. I've had trouble with the buy-in because I knew this was not accurate, but people are watching that way. They're watching it for entertainment. And so because their guard is down, because they're watching true crime as a sort of escapist way of identifying predators, they're very receptive for all this sort of political messaging, which wasn't actually true. Even the victims' families themselves dispute this, and they don't like the dramatization. If we go on to the next one, the woman who showed up at his trial and screamed emotively that she hated him, that this is what real losing control was like, not this cold, calculated veneer you have trying to do your insanity plea, which is really harrowing to watch, actually. She said, I was never contacted about the show. I feel like Netflix should have asked if we minded or how we felt about making it. They didn't ask me anything. They just did it. I'm not money hungry, and that's what this show is about. Netflix is just trying to get paid. I could even understand if they gave some of the money to the victims' children, not necessarily their families. I mean, I'm old. I'm very comfortable. But the victims have children and grandchildren. If the show benefited them in some way, it wouldn't feel so harsh and careless. It's sad they're just making money off this tragedy. That's just greed. And it turns out propaganda is very profitable.
Yes, and it's not just that they're... It's not. It's even worse because they're not just propagandizing just for the sake of it, although they are doing that. Yep. They're making the money off it and then supposedly saying that they're doing it in the name of the benefit of the black community in America while actively not consulting any of the people who were involved, not involving them in the process at all, not clearing things with them. It is pretty evil.
Yeah, and it's also, if you're making content to raise awareness about gay men being killed, perhaps advise them not to put themselves in compromising positions, because poor choice of words, I know, but I'd prefer they didn't get murdered, just because I don't really like serial killing paedophile cannibals. Shocking. Controversial opinion, I know. Go on to the next one. This isn't unique to true crime content on Netflix. As you've seen with Mindhunter Season 2, they actually try and suggest that Wayne Williams was not guilty of the Atlanta child murders, which is really infuriating.
This was really annoying because I really like Mindhunter, and I noticed that this started to happen towards the latter half of Season 2, where it suddenly becomes very bogged down in this Wayne Williams story, where some of the other previous episodes had like one and done stories where they're examining someone. And it felt very particular to Wayne Williams because it felt like they were trying to imply that he wasn't guilty. And it was also after David Fincher, the creator of the show, seems to have very visibly taken a step away from the show. So his guiding creative vision of it seems to have been diminished. He might have put it in the hands of other executive producers who, rather than making a really interesting show about serial killers and the FBI agents tracking them down, decided they wanted to put some political messaging in there. But even then, they did a terrible job because even as presented in the show, they use the language of cinema and the music to try and make it seem like, what's his name? Ford? Is that his name, the main character? Mm. Is Ford and wrong about Wayne? Is he doing this? But everything that happens in it is very clear that, yes, this guy did it. And so, to the point where they have to put up a black card after the show has finished saying, like, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah. It coincided with the investigation, the reopening of the case by Mayor Lance Bottoms of Georgia, trying to look into who actually did it, because there were all these claims you saw in the show of the KKK did it. And they weren't the black churchgoers who were at the rally that the mayor and the police commissioner said, oh, we're going to find this, started emotively jumping up and down, knowing it's the Klan, it's the Klan. Meanwhile, in real life, Wayne Williams failed 3 polygraph tests, not decisive proof, but he does come across as a narcissist. His unique carpet fibers and dog hair were found on multiple victims. He was found at the scene of a crime, possibly dumping a body off a bridge when it was found days later upstream from it. He had a so-called music recruitment business that used young children who were the exact age and demographic of all of the victims, but it never materialized. There was no actual studio time booked in. And in an interview with CNN a few years later, he implied that he had CIA training at 19 on how to strangle a man to death. Safe to say he's probably the culprit.
Nah, it's just because he's black, mate.
Yeah, is it because
he's racist?
Black?
The FBI was just profiling him, bro.
And one last one, just to go on to an article I wrote quite a while ago, actually, way before I was here. I don't know if you've seen Netflix's You.
Sadly, once again, the missus has subjected me to parts of it.
Okay, so season one, and I actually quite liked.
I've got something similar as well after this, but carry on.
Okay, so season one I quite liked, especially because a book collector with poor taste in women, I could not relate to that main character, to the point where my sister was saying, oh, you're a bit like Joe, it's a bit awkward. But in season three, he has a family, settles down in the suburbs, immediately starts cheating, the character assassinate him. The worst part is actually that they introduce him to an anti-vaxxer, so their kid gets ill. And Jill, who hosts a science birthday party as well for his kids, so it's kind of contradictory character there, says, oh, I'm against vaccines, which we obviously do not endorse, YouTube. And they use that as the excuse as to why it's justified to kill him. And throughout other seasons, Joe has spoken about hating Trump supporters, being a feminist, all of his friends are LGBT allies and
stop
trans.
Making serial killers and horror movie monsters allies.
Yes.
If you want us to take you more seriously, stop valorizing clearly evil people.
They're trying to prime you to have certain forms of violence be legitimate against your political enemies. That's all this is. And that's all the Dharma Show is. It's about racial propaganda. That's all Mindhunter was. It's to suggest the police are racist. They are trying to reprogram you. And so, if you'd like some nourishing crime content...
And it's also what the Santa Clarita Diet is, if you've ever watched that.
No,
I have sadly been put through that. And it's a woman in Santa Clarita in California becomes a zombie, and all of her victims that she chooses are overt caricatures and straw men of Trump voters, who are, of course, Nazis, men's rights activists, who are, of course, just misogynists, right, who hate their wives, and anybody else under the sun that you can imagine being a leftist straw man that they want to beat up. And, of course, all of these people die in horribly gruesome and graphically violent ways.
This is why I'm going to do a scripted video at some point on horror movies in modern day being feminist power fantasies, like Midsommar. So if you'd like to watch some actually nourishing true crime content, go check out this video on either YouTube or our website, The Killer Clowns of Leftism, where I explore the life and crimes of John Wayne Gacy. And if you'd like to watch that rather than the Dharma case, because the Dharma case gives you some very incorrect political conclusions, watch this and give some takeaway on how to actually defend our kids from the monsters and boogeymen lurking beneath their beds and in libraries. But until next time, I just suppose, cancel your Netflix subscription. It's rubbish.
All right, let's get on to the video comments.
Like, I like how he's saying, like, oh, there's a right wing of the Labour Party. He's like saying there's a cold part of hell.
That's remarkably illiterate of you, Connor. In his Inferno, Dante describes being guided through hell by Virgil and how it gets colder as he descends and is further distanced from God's light. He passes Muhammad in the eighth circle, ripped from groin to chin for his sin of sowing discord, and winds up in the pit of hell where Satan sits in an icy cavern grinding Judas Iscariot in his jaws.
Okay, I stand corrected then. I mean, it was more of a rhetorical flourish because you have the phrase, oh, when hell freezes over, but fair, I'm happy to be corrected.
Very interesting, thank you for that.
I've been thinking a lot about political patronage of late, and I can't help but marvel at how little the Anglo-conservative parties do for their own constituents. I mean, the left-wing parties, all of their policies are built around punishing their enemies and benefiting their base. The conservatives never do that. They generally spend more time attacking their own constituents, like that guy that told the truth about Birmingham. Can you guys think of any good patronage ideas of what the conservatives can do to help their own base and improve their livelihoods?
Stop alienating youth activists.
Stop infighting.
Subsidize the mallard. That'd be good.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Based little press arm, many which we're friends with here.
Actually, when you say you're going to do something about immigration, do it.
Yep.
Just a few suggestions.
So, I am out shopping, and you may notice that the lights have been dim. Looking down there, there's no lights in the Montres. To save electricity, of course, so this is the new normal for Denmark. The lights are dimmed in all of the grocery stores. And also, on another note, our Prime Minister has finally declared election right this moment as I'm filming this. And you'll probably first see this tomorrow, but yeah, finally. And no lights.
I hope your next one gets you out of the one foot in the grave with the renewables.
Yeah, hopefully you guys can make some good decisions with the votes. Mm. Let's carry on.
Tony D and Little Joan with another Legend of the Lotus Eaters. This one comes from Ron Swansea of Swansea, Wales. This is about Pennard Castle. In the 12th century, there was a chieftain who did a favor for the king, and the king gave him his daughter's hand in marriage. Before the chieftain married her, however, he took her into his bedchamber for a debauched party, let's say. The princess was friends with the local fairies. The fairies summoned a huge storm, which collapsed the castle, and the chieftain and princess vanished.
Callum's going to be thrilled. Callum's going to be thrilled to hear this one. Finally evidence that Callum's going to believe. You hear that, Callum?
I like...
Finally got you.
I like there being a myth, and I hope it's true, about thought patrollery by nature itself. Just like, don't have giant debaucherous parties or smash a castle down.
I mean, it does seem to be something that happens. I mean, I went to this anonymous 15-man orgy over the weekend and somehow ended up with monkeypox after gargling all of their piss. It's like nature has something against me or something. But anyway, let's go on to the written
comments.
Clip that
one for Twitter, please.
Comments, I'll read out the first one. General Hai Ping says, kudos to Connor for sitting before Piers Zintz,
Morgan,
a man who thinks he's playing 4D chess at a grandmaster's level by holding every conceivable position one could hold, but ends up just coming across like a brainless automaton that's incapable of even processing what he's saying. I mean, that was the funny thing when I watched that clip, was that the most recent thing I'd seen of him was him arguing with Andrew Tate and calling Andrew Tate a misogynist for saying that women can be fallible too.
Yeah, he said if you criticize one woman, you're a misogynist.
So he admits to being a misogynist for everything he said about Meghan Markle.
But it's funny. Yeah, that's actually a valid point. It's funny because he then ended up agreeing with me the entire time.
Yeah, that was the funny
If you
thing.
Don't know what we're talking about, by the way, just go check my Twitter or Piers Morgan Uncensored YouTube channel. Because
if you type in Talk TV or Piers Uncensored,
it'll be on
YouTube.
Piers Uncensored. Yeah. I basically just sat down for a debate on if Me Too had gone too far and was making Gen Z sexless and afraid. And one woman said, "I'm glad all men are terrified. I kind of enjoy that fear."
She said that they should be frightened. But anyway,
yeah, let's evil human being.
Go on to some of your comments.
So on to why the Conservative Party conference was a catastrophe. Paul Vorbeck, Tories spend more time coddling leftist football players for losing than defending from their base from the state persecution. Yep, can feel that one. God almighty. Bald Eagle, 1787. What conservatives are realizing that in order to keep their seats, they actually have to start being conservatives. Surprise Pikachu face. I'm interested to see if there's a massive walk away from the system after the midterms if Republicans get nothing done over here in America. I say stick it out. Say keep your role in the party. I've been one around to the idea of incrementalism because I think there's going to be a massive Labour loss, and we can just point to the neolibs and go, see, those guys, those Blairites, you've been singing for the wrong hymn sheet for years, time to let us have a go. And as I'm looking, and I keep referring to them, but the Mallard lads are very inspired, very well read, and know how much, as much to real politique as principles, and so I think that will be the wave they ride to improve the party. So, hopeful white pill. Just not for a little while. Thomas Howell, that's a really complicated way of saying Birmingham isn't a dump. It's a shithole crime hall. Agreed.
Yeah, true.
It's horrible. David Fisher, what's happening to the Conservative Party is indicative of what happens to any organisation once it embraces the feminine. It is an uncomfortable fact that nobody has the balls to admit. I will say there are a lot of effeminate gay men who have populated the party, and I think that's because they don't...
A lot of women in... high-ranking positions.
They don't have to settle down as early as we do. For example, we don't have to think about family, and so they can dedicate a lot of time.
They don't have to settle down at all. They can continue living relatively degenerate lifestyles for as long as their body can keep up.
Yes, yeah. So that means that they can either ascend the political hierarchy through time, or, and dread to think I could suggest this, through other favours. Anonymy. Guardian. Oh no, Liz Truss is wearing a red V-neck dress. Also Guardian, crickets on Biden dictator-looking speech. Yeah, red optics not always the best, is it? S.H. Silver, it's not necessarily that the Tories are Blairite, but a party of similarly neoliberal Thatcherites, which occupy the opposite side of the globalist coin. Thatcher herself said that Tony Blair and the neoliberal shift in Labour was her greatest political achievement. Yeah, yeah. So, but Thatcherism, I think, was less intelligent because it did it so quickly. Like, one of the few things I agree with Naomi Klein's shock doctrine on, even though she's a literal communist, is that Thatcher used, she like glassed it, like really did privatization really quickly and ripped the band-aid off. And so that meant that her place in history has been very divisive. Whereas Tony Blair, people are only slowly waking up to it. But that's a testament to how hidden hand he did a lot of these reforms. We haven't felt the effect immediately.
I think in the contemporary era, a lot of people just think of Blair as that guy who followed Bush into Iraq.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons that a lot of people hated him, especially at the time. But like you say, people are starting to wake up to the fact that it wasn't just Iraq.
No.
It was basically everything else he did that was terrible.
I did want to ask Tom Harwood what happened in 1997, but we didn't get time, unfortunately, on the conference floor. One last one for this one. Small L libertarian. You know what I find offensive? I find it offensive that the Labour Party has inflicted this tragedy upon Birmingham. God damn, this guy should get out of politics. I wouldn't go with that last part. I would go, however, that Dan, if you're still watching, mate, that's a tactic you got to go with. Double down, because you were right the first time. Birmingham is rubbish.
Yep, it's just true. On to my comments here. Captain Charlie the Beagle says, journos to laid off coal miners. Just learn to code, bro. Yeah. Journos when they're told to learn code after being laid off. OMG, this is harassment. Translation, OMG, you want me to do manual labor like some immigrant, like some pleb? That is how they see it. Yes, these people are scum. Omar Awad, the Mazzas, Lorenzes, and Stelters of the world are only bad at their job if you're under the delusion that their purpose is to spread truth. Obviously, it's not. Their trade is selling your attention to advertisers and conveying narratives in service of left-wing governments or BlackRock/Soros, etc. Lucrative work if they can get it, but it seems only the wealthy have access to the profitable positions. Hence why I think that the work we do in organizations like Lotus Eaters is very important. Kelb Panthera says, on Lorenz wiping her tweets, the Wayback Machine isn't the only archive service. The internet never forgets.
Archive.ph.
Yes, there are plenty of others, but it's very telling that she's got such influence behind her from her family. Freewill 2112, they might consider themselves new guiding lights of our modern morality. I think they're ultra-rich robber barons with morals that would make Peter Rachman blush. Agreed. Nicholas Valentine, journalists are rich kids who benefited from nepotism, just needed the dun-dun-dun sound effect to add to the shock and suspense I feel right now. We need to get a soundboard in here.
Can we get the Scooby-Doo, woo, every time someone says right wing or far right?
Ooh, yeah, we far definitely
right.
need
woo.
That.
Whenever
conservatives get scuppered, I would have gotten away with it too. Andrew Narog says, yet further evidence that the current legacy media is the enemy of the people, as if that wasn't clear enough already. X, Y, and Z, E, explains why the Wayback Machine has started to become overtly compromised in the last couple of years, that it does. Also following up, there's an interesting connection between being idly rich and being a commie. Yes, there is. Captain Charlie the Beagle says that binary server list is just an a la carte menu for when we get to eat the rich. Disavow? Probably.
So, for Netflix Dharma, Binary Surfer at the top here. God's work you're doing there, mate. We cancelled our Wokeflix subscription in response to cuties and will not be resubscribing. Full stop. That is the way to go. I've just got a normie family and use the account for free. And one of us at least has to watch the garbage they're putting out, so I can tell you all not to. Baron von Warhawk. I find it funny that when it comes to the progressives at Netflix, racist cops are viewed as more morally evil than the cannibalistic rapist pedophile murderer who killed a bunch of kids. It just shows how tribalistic they are. It doesn't matter if Jeffrey killed and ate those people. He's a member of the alphabet community and therefore must close ranks and change history to fit their worldview of cops, bad, alphabet, good, no matter what. It's funny, actually. The Dharma series has John Wayne Gacy in it, in the clown makeup, getting lethal injected.
Is he like a sidekick character? Is he an amusing, does he come and high-five Dharma at one point?
He's in the last episode.
He's got a child locked up in the room and they tag-team it.
So, because he's in the last episode because the day that Jeffrey Dharma got baptized in prison was the day that John Wayne Gacy got lethal injected, and there was a solar eclipse that day. So it's actually a very interesting bit. And the guy who plays Gacy is sufficiently disturbing. But notice how they didn't do a series on Gacy dramatized, and in the John Wayne Gacy tapes, they kind of skirted over his political affiliation because it's very inconvenient to mention that he was ingratiated in the Democrat Party apparatus to the point of where he was friends with Rosalind Carter.
Right, okay, listen, if they did an actually accurate series on Dharma or Gacy, yep, I can see a legion of Twitter retards coming out saying, OMG, iconic ally, must be protected at all costs.
Well, people were simping for Jeffrey Dharma because they said he was attractive. Nobody simped for John Wayne Gacy.
That's seven pieces.
Yeah, the real life
and
Jeffrey Dharma had
high
cheekbones. That was it. No.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, but it's the same with the Pennywise and Babadook stuff. It's just stop fetishizing cannibalistic serial killers and literal monsters. Lord Nerevar. Hello again, mate. I, for one, am shocked that Netflix politicized the story of a serial killer and his victims. I'm so shocked that I won't watch it. Shocked it took this long. Anyway, Kevin Fox. Gay bars are, quote, safe spaces. Not a Tory party conference. I once went to a gay club in Seapoint, Cape Town, along with four other straight friends. My business partner had shares in the club. So there are three hetero males and two hetero females in our group. We had a VIP booth on the top floor. Full disclosure, I was a 40-year-old man with a shaved head and a white t-shirt and jeans. As we climbed the stairs to a booth, my arse was grabbed six times before we reached the first floor. Safe space, my arse. Oops, wrong phrase. Suppose on that note,
yes,
on that amusing note.
I think that's all the time we've got for today. So thank you very, very much for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday at 1 o'clock, where Connor will be speaking to Harry Miller from Fair Cop about his experiences with the police at the Conservative Party conference. So you'll definitely want to tune in for that one. It's going to be very interesting. Until then, thank you for watching and goodbye.